Welcome to Inside Ag. I'm Greg Deering. Today I'm joined by Mark Nelson, Kansas Farm Bureau's Director of Commodities, who's here to talk about tariffs. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Mark, you recently wrote an article highlighting tariffs for Kansas Farm Bureau's Pinpointing Policy series. My first question, what are tariffs exactly and who pays them?
Great question, and yeah, great place to start. Essentially, a tariff is a duty or a tax imposed on imported goods, and that might be something that was manufactured. It could be a commodity, such as wheat or something like that. And it is paid for by the manufacturer or the company who is selling it. It's not really a tax on the country it's coming from. It is really more of being paid for by that seller as it goes through customs. And really the question and the uncertainty and the debate is always, what are we doing with that cost? Who pays it?
And what are some of the potential impacts from increasing tariffs on imports and figuring out who pays those?
You bet. And that is the gist of everything here. And really, there's about three ways to go on how that's handled. First, that seller or that exporter into the United States or whatever country may just absorb it. They eat it. If it's a very small tariff, they may do that. And if that's the case, we really don't see it being an increased cost to retailers. It doesn't become a cost to consumers, and it just is a few more dollars in the government treasury. Typically, that doesn't happen. Another thing they may do, though, is they try to circumvent that tariff. For example, let's say we put a tariff on all exports from country X. Well, they may move their manufacturing to country Y. So all of a sudden now, those goods are coming from a different country and are not getting that tariff. And so we kind of, you know, and honestly, I think we may have all heard, I've read some stories where China's already done a little bit of that, where they've moved some manufacturing to Vietnam. The other way of circumventing a tariff would be to set up a company or work with a company in a neighboring country. For example, Mexico or Canada, where we have a trade agreement. So then all of a sudden, that product is now a product of that country coming into the United States. And again, not subject to any kind of tariff. So that is something that could very easily happen. And then the third thing is, and this is where the debate is, and typically what we always assume is going to happen, is that tariff gets passed on to that retailer. And so then you get that same kind of question. You know, does that retailer absorb it? Probably not, because margins are typically very tight. So then, you know, if they're passing that on, and that leads to the fact that it's going to, you know, make an increase in cost to consumers. And I guess that's where, you know, anyone who is against tariffs and are concerned about the incoming administration and their potential for tariffs is that, hey, it's going to increase costs. And that could be. But another thing that could happen is that retailers say, well, we don't want to buy that product from that country because now it costs me too much. And so they turn to either A, other countries, which really doesn't help U.S. manufacturing, or they start buying maybe from domestic producers. And that's good. And so that's kind of the other argument, and that's kind of the argument of the current or the incoming administration, that these tariffs will actually spur U.S. production. Now, I think at that point now we need to kind of ask ourselves, you know, what is it take to make something? And typically we'd say it requires a combination of land, labor, capital, all in combination with a business environment that is conducive to business and manufacturing. Now, again, you know, in the United States, our rule of laws and our courts, contract law, all these things are very conducive. You know, we are the best as far as the business environment. Our regulatory environment isn't nearly as friendly. Now, again, the incoming administration promises they're going to roll back things and maybe make things more friendly. The other big issue is labor. How much labor does it take to create this product? And I can tell you right now, one of the biggest concerns of Kansas farmers and ranchers is available labor, right? We hear that constantly. We can't find good labor when we need it, and we can't keep it. And we kind of hear that across industries, not just agriculture. So the concern is there enough labor in the United States to actually support some of these things? And it would also then cost more, right? Because the American worker is probably going to want more money. They're probably going to want a benefit package. They're probably going to want a retirement package. And these are all things that, you know, foreign countries often do not have to pay their labor. And so, you know, that's the concern is, yeah, we may get it more increased manufacturing in the United States, but it could very easily lead to higher cost products and more inflation. And I don't want to belabor all this, but I would also touch on the fact, you know, when we first had several tariffs back in the 2018, one of them was to protect the steel and aluminum industry. And I think some folks might look at that and say, well, in the next year, 2019, U.S. production of steel did increase. But if we go from then on to today, and, you know, the Trump administration put those tariffs on, they carried it all the way through. The Biden administration continued those tariffs. So they've been on the steel and aluminum industries. But if you look back at what U.S. production has done, yes, it went up in 2019. But since that time, it's actually gone down, and we're back down to pre-tariff levels of U.S. production. So, you know, we put those tariffs on to support and maybe expand U.S. steel and aluminum production. It didn't happen. And in fact, one company, U.S. Steel, is still unprofitable. And the only way they think they're going to survive is if they merge with Nippon Steel out of Japan. So, you know, we got into that. And that's one case where it really wasn't very effective.
You kind of jumped into my next question here. I was going to ask about those first round of tariffs. Supporting the steel industry, I think, was a big goal of that first one. I guess, what were some of the effects of, because steel production did rise, but also the cost of steel, nobody buys steel, right? You buy farm machinery, you buy equipment that has steel in it, you buy a car that has steel in it. Raising the price of steel through that we could import cheaper from somewhere else, what is the knockoff effects on down the line then as it goes into finished goods?
Yeah, on the case of steel and aluminum, yeah, if you increase that, it didn't cost more to make that combine, to make that tractor, and those costs were passed on to Kansas farmers and ranchers. You know, really from a farmer standpoint, it's not the fact that we're putting a tariff on washing machines made in China or some other country. It's the threat of retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. And I think that's the biggest thing that we worry about from an ag standpoint is that, you know, okay, we get a trade war going on, we increase tariffs, fine. But when they have retaliatory tariffs on our products, it now makes our products way more expensive.
And we saw that during that first round of, tariff negotiations as well, correct?
Absolutely. You know, we put tariffs on several major trading partners for steel and aluminum, and then additional tariffs on China. And what happened was China, Canada, the European Union, India, Mexico, and Turkey all, and this is back in 2018, put retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods, many of those ag goods, anywhere from 2% to 140%. And what happened then, that makes the cost of U.S. corn, soybeans, beef more expensive. And so they turned, you know, those buyers, those consumers in those other countries turned and, you know, it helped Brazil. It helped Argentina. It helped all of our competitors in world trade. And what happened then was U.S. exports fell, ag exports, prices fell, incomes fell. Now, the administration helped, right? They created the program, I think it was called the Market Facilitation Program, and that provided $23 billion to farmers in 2018 and 2019. But that's a pretty big cost to the U.S. government to support those tariffs.
And as I mentioned at the top of the show here, you wrote the Pinpointing Policy article. So I guess I should ask, what policy does Farm Bureau have surrounding tariffs and trade in general?
Yeah, well, because agriculture is so dependent on trade in such a huge way, we have a lot of trade policy. And I won't go into it all, but the place for members to go to would be go to www.kfb.org, go to our website, click on advocacy, and you'll see our AFBF book, but primarily it's AFBF Policy 252, International Trade. And right there on the very first line, it says, we are strong advocates of fair and open world trade. And under Section 4 of that policy, it lists several things that would help increase. And number 9 in that list is lowering overburdensome, unreasonable tariffs on agricultural products, especially the products other countries are not producing. And then 8.5 in that same policy says we support limiting trade disruptions and resolving trade disputes through negotiations, not tariffs or withdrawals from other trade agreement discussions. And in fact, right now the U.S. is opposing some proposed Commerce Department tariffs on 2,4-D. Because tariffs aren't always on washing machines. I mean, right now they're considering tariffs on 2,4-D because domestic producers are saying it's hurting competition. Kansas farmers, U.S. farmers would say, you know, yes, we've got a domestic supplier, but we need the additional supplies from imports to keep the cost of 2,4-D a little bit more competitive, because what's going to happen if we took those imports out, the cost of 2,4-D would go up, and all of a sudden our input costs go up and our margins get even tighter.
Why is free trade, fair trade important, not just to farmers and ranchers, but everyone?
See, I'll go back to just the classical economists, people like Adam Smith, and his invisible hand, David Ricardo. Basically, all their work suggested that both individuals and countries will benefit from being the most efficient they can and producing the thing that they have a comparative advantage on, and then trading. This whole concept of, I'll do what I do best, and I do more efficiently, and then I'll trade that for you for the things that you do best and do more efficiently. And the result is, from an economic standpoint, is I make more money, right? I'm more profitable, but now I'm also getting these other goods at a lower cost, and so that we all benefit. And then when we think about this and kind of bring it back to agriculture, you know, we are tremendous supporters of free and open trade because we have a comparative advantage. The U.S. Has roughly 10% of the world's arable land, 4% of the world's population. You think about Kansas, we've got 21 million acres of harvested cropland, 15 million acres of pasture. We have way more productive capacity than our 2.9 million Kansans can eat. So we've got to ship our agricultural products out of the state, and a lot of that also has to go out of the country. And I would argue that, you know, American farmers were the most efficient in the world. We can produce a higher quality, a safer, and more environmentally friendly food than really anywhere else in the world. So, you know, the world benefits when we produce food and fiber and trade. It makes us all a little bit better off.
It's Mark Nelson, Kansas Farm Bureau's Director of Commodities. Mark, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Greg.
And for those listening at home, if you want to check out that pinpointing policy article that Mark wrote, you can go to kfb.org and visit the advocacy page, and they will be there along the left-hand side.
If you've enjoyed the podcast, please give it a like and share with others. I'm Greg Deering, and this has been Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture.